I've set the recording. So,
Okay.
over to you, Francis.
Okay. I hope more join us today. I have a cutoff at 10. If this class goes below 10, I'm going to have to stop doing this. So I hope that doesn't happen because I enjoy this series, but we're now sitting, including BL and I, at 8. So hopefully that will change.
Nine.
9 just came. Yeah. Oh, I'm sure today it will go over 10, but I'm just saying we're kind of hovering on that limit there. So, because these webinars take quite a bit to put together, and yeah, I need at least 10 people. But yeah, I'm preaching to the choir. You're all here. It's the ones that aren't here I need to be speaking to, right? Anyway, welcome to the 61st webinar on Secret Teachings of All Ages by Manly P. Hall. This webinar series is available on Makara.us under the subheadings Maori Federation Webinars and Webinar Series in Progress. Previous episodes of this, The Secret Doctrine, and the Treatise on Cosmic Fire series are also available on YouTube. Just do a search for Francis Donald and the webinar you wish to view. You can join any of these webinars on the homepage of MauriFederation.com. They have an active webinar panel up here in the upper left-hand corner. And it's just a real quick way, especially if you misplaced your invitation or didn't get one, just go to MauriFederation.com and you'll find a link right there. Okay, well, this will be our fourth session on the chapter entitled The Zodiac and Its Signs. During our last session, we learned about Zoroaster's Cave of Initiation, which, according to Porphyry of Tyre, depicted the sun, planets, and the zodiac overhead in gems and gold. And in fact, there are some ancient caves they've known to have been spiritual sites for thousands of years that exist in Persia and are still recognized as such. But no one has specifically identified Zoroaster's cave, but that's not to say that it didn't exist. Then we learned that the sun, either the actual sun or the sun personified by the Christ-like Mithras, was depicted emerging from the back of the Apis bull, in both cases here, throughout the ancient Mediterranean cultures, or a number of cultures that held this belief or recognized this form of symbolism. The celestial bull was said to, quote unquote, break the egg of the year with its horns, meaning that every year, Taurus initiated the astrological new year with the promise of a fecund spring. This was also the meaning of Mithras performing the taroctony, that's the killing of the bull, wherein the blood of the bull, symbolizing the life force of a waxing sun at the spring equinox, fertilized the land. The equinox is here indicated by the equal emphasis placed on the sun and moon. We then took a look at Samson Arnold Mackey's Mythological Astronomy of the Ancients Demonstrated, which described a threefold sequential alternation of the poles, resulting in a great change in the relative position of the equator to the ecliptic. This theory aligns with HPB's teaching, which states that during the second root race, there was a Hyperborean continent located at or near the North Pole that had a tropical climate, a condition that could only exist if the Earth's poles were at a radically different angle to the ecliptic than they normally are, than they are today. According to Mackey, both the three hawks, shown here, atop Cleopatra's needle, and the serpent coiled around the egg represent this threefold descent and ascent of the Earth's polar axis. MPH then describes the Abra Akkad Abra, commonly known as Abracadabra, which means the bull, the only bull, or simply the one and only solar bull. Of course, that's very specific to the Taurian age. Here's what a repetition of Abra Akkad Abra, omitting a letter at each stage until one letter is left, looks like, as shown in the little amulet at left. But as I mentioned during our last session, it seems to me that the true order, or at least an important alternative, would be to begin with A and descend into diversity. Then, at least in one possible interpretation, we have A representing unmanifested absolute Godhead, or at least the first logos, AB representing the first causal duality, spirit, matter in the abstract, then ABR representing our sun in the Taurian age, the solar bull, particularly known as such during that age. Then we begin the word with the next A, we begin the word Akkad, which represents the threefold solar logos in incarnation, the cyclical manifestation of Abir, which is the solar bull. The last four stages represent the further descent into matter of Abra Akkad, the one and only solar bull, mirror the first four, suggesting the as above, so below paradigm. We then hypothesize that Abracadabra could be used to represent the threefold descent and ascent of the poles, as described by Mackey, who is actually quoting Herodotus. Finally, MPH compares Abracadabra to the Caduceus with this comment. The 11 volves of the serpent form a triangle similar to that formed by the 11 diminishing lines of the Abracadabra, which we see here. We next learned that, quote, nearly every religion of the world shows traces of astrological influence. MPH then supports the statement with examples from the Old Testament and the mythologies of Greece and Rome. MPH then puts forward the idea that the original 22 letters of the Hebrew alphabet were derived from groups of stars, an idea put forth in both the Sefer Yetzirah, which discusses the creation of the universe by means of Hebrew letters. And also this idea is forwarded in Robert Graves' book, The White Goddess. I found MPH's next assertion particularly esoteric. Quote, the starry handwriting on the wall of the heavens referred to words spelt out with fixed stars for consonants and the planets or luminaries for vowels. These, coming into ever different combinations, spelt words which, when properly read, foretold future events. Well, from one point of view, this you could just call this the definition of astrology, reading the stars and the planets. But when you look at them actually as consonants and vowels, there's also a different kind of idea that's suggested. This supports the idea that an esoteric word structure is created through its consonants, the stars, with variations in emphasis provided by the vowels or the planets. This also sounds like an aspect of Sinzar, the language of the masters and high initiates, whose specific meanings would be part of the secrets of initiation. You would be literally taught how to read the language of the stars and planets. Next, we learned that, quote, four of the signs of the zodiac have been permanently dedicated to the equinoxes and the solstices. And while the signs no longer correspond with the ancient constellations to which they were assigned and from which they secured their names, they are accepted by modern astronomer as a basis of calculation. So the beginning degree of each sign in the cardinal cross marks the solstices and the equinoxes, though the actual position of the sun relative to the constellations during the solstices and equinoxes is currently oriented to the signs of the mutable cross. But we ignore that in the reading of the signs and recognize the cardinal cross attributions. MPH then focuses in on Aries, which the ancients associated with the Lamb of God, which taketh away the sin of the world, a phrase now associated with the avatar Jesus, but which in fact existed long before Jesus came along. But, you know, like so many other aspects of the ageless wisdom, around the time of Jesus, they were borrowed, you could say, to put it nicely. They were borrowed and attributed to Jesus. You know, that doesn't mean that he didn't also, for instance, perform miracles, but much of what is said about Jesus has happened in through previous avatars and in different mystery schools. Here's a perfect example. Okay, this takes us up to where we left off last time. And we'll start this session by rereading. Oh, here's I really like this painting. This is the painting of Lamb of God, which taketh away the sins of the world. And you can see this terrific alignment here. It's both in landscape mode, you know, where this this altar stands behind, you know, in the further distance from the well. But you can also just read it vertically, where you have a direct descent of the dove and the lamb and the altar, and then this pole, the pole of the world, the axis, axis mundi, they call it, into the well, which represents the earth. So it's a particular favorite of mine by Jan van Eyck. Yeah, so can we get a reader, please, to reread this passage from last time?
Okay, Francis, I'm going to start it off.
Okay.
But first, I would like to say that VK tells us in Esoteric Astrology, page 63, that it's interesting also to note in this connection, due to the precession of the equinoxes, a fourth type of force is brought to bear upon planet and man, but one which is seldom recognized and given due place in the horoscope. Hmm. The month and the sign, or the place of the sign in the heavens, do not really coincide. When we state, for instance, that the sun is in Aries, it conveys an esoteric truth,
yeah,
but not an exoteric fact. The sun was in Aries at the beginning of this great cycle, but it is not exactly the same position today when it is found in that sign. And then I'll add, you know, the precession of the equinoxes, we're just finishing up the one. Age of Pisces and moving into the age of Aquarius. And that means at that point, they're almost 30 degrees. Well, at this point, they're almost 30 degrees apart. But anyway, right. I just wanted to point that out, that esoterically, we use these, the solstices that have been set up with these great thought forms over thousands of years. And That's the reason why, because it's the esoteric truth. So anyway, I just
Yeah,
wanted to point
and
that out.
I've always found that to be a really important quote. Isn't that in the first early pages of EA, like
It is. It's
30,
on page 63.
63? Yeah. It's really important because basically he says that the archetype wherein Aries actually, the sign of Aries actually appeared, quote unquote, behind the sun at the vernal equinox at that time, that set the archetype, and that the energies hold to that archetype, and that therefore it is valid to use our Western system. You know, of course, the Vedic system in India uses the actual sign that is behind the sun, which changes everybody's sign from what they would be, well, almost, if you're born on the cusp, it could be the same, but it changes quite a few people's signs. But yeah, thanks for that. It's BL, really important quote. Okay.
Right. The summer solstice is regarded as occurring in Cancer, the crab, which the Egyptians called the scarab, a beetle of the family Lamellicorns, the head of the insect kingdom, and sacred to the Egyptians as a symbol of eternal life. It is evident that the constellation of the crab is represented by this peculiar creature because the sun, after passing through this house, proceeds to walk backwards or descend the zodiacal arc. Cancer is the symbol generation, for it is the house of the moon, great mother of all things, and the patroness of the life forces of nature. Diana, the moon goddess of the Greeks, is called the mother of the world. Concerning the worship of the feminine or maternal principle, Richard Payne Knight writes, by attracting a or heaving the waters of the ocean, she naturally appeared to be the sovereign of humidity. And by seeming to operate so powerfully upon the constitutions of women, she equally appeared to be the patroness and regulatress. Yeah, of nutrition and passive generation, whence she is said to have received her nymphs or subordinate personifications from the ocean, and is often represented by the symbol of the sea crab, an animal that has the property of spontaneously detaching from its own body any limb that has been hurt or mutilated and reproducing another in its place. This is from the symbolic language of ancient art and mythology. This water sign, being symbolic of the maternal principle of nature and recognized by the pagans as the origin of all life, was a natural and consistent domicile.
Thank you, BL. Okay. By the way, when I mention these books and show photos of them, just be aware that if you like the quote, and you know the quality of the books that MPH quotes from varies hugely. Some of them are fantastic. Really good source books, and others not so much. You know, I'll point that out as we go, just that the ones that are that he indicates during this session. But if you're ever interested, you know, just about all of them are available online in a PDF version. Just do a search for the title of the book and put PDF after it, and it'll take you to, you know, for instance, there's a great site called Internet Archives, and you can download the book and you have it, you know, and then you can do word searches, etc. If you really like the quote, for instance, you can read more about it. That's what I do when I'm preparing for these. And like I said, the quality of the books vary, but some of the sources I've been very happy to add to my library. Okay, anyway. So first up, by the way, what makes these webinars interesting? Participation. So, anybody have any thoughts or questions? Please jump in because dialogue is always more interesting than monologue. Okay, so first up, the summer solstice is regarded as occurring in Cancer, the crab, which the Egyptians called the scarab, a beetle of the family Namelicorns or Namelicornis, the head of the insect kingdom, and sacred to the Egyptians as a symbol of eternal life. It is evident that the constellation of the crab is represented by this peculiar creature because the sun, after passing through this house, proceeds to walk backwards or descend the zodiacal arc. So we talked about this last time, but bears repeating. As you can see, the sculptures of the scarab were actually realistic renditions of the genus Scarabaeus, you know, saker, Scarabaeus saker, or dung beetle, which was known for rolling dung into balls and laying eggs inside it. This symbolizes the cycle of life, death, and rebirth, a metaphor for spiritual transformation and renewal. Ancient Egyptians believed that Ra, in the form of a scarab, rolled the sun across the sky, thus symbolizing creation and the daily renewal of life. And let's see, also in this, it says, after passing through the house, proceeds to walk backwards. That's obvious because the meaning is obvious because of the summer equinox, then the sun descends in brightness towards the winter. I'm sorry. Yeah, towards the winter solstice. That's right. So it appears to quote unquote walk backwards. So next, Cancer is the symbol of generation. For it is the house of the moon, the great mother of all things, and the patroness of the life force of nature. Diana, the moon goddess of the Greeks, is called the mother of the world. DK says, the moon is the ruler of Cancer. Here you have the idea of form being the custodian of a living spiritual essence of the home, whether the home is the fourth or lowest aspect of the personality or the fourth kingdom in nature, but all ruled by the fourth ray of harmony through conflict, a harmony to be wrought out within the form on earth. So it is the most form-based of all the of all the constellations of all the signs. In the Labors of Hercules, DK separates Artemis, which is the moon goddess, from Diana, associating the former with the moon and describing the latter as a solar being, calling her Huntress of the Heavens, who represents a transition in the nature of the form aspect as the disciple moves from Cancer to Virgo. Normally, they're considered to be the same person, Diana and Artemis. But here you have this very interesting and I think important distinction. May I see a hand?
Yes, Scott, go ahead.
Can you go back one slide?
Sure.
I'll make that two slides. Here we go. The Huntress is in that, in the sky.
Oh yeah, look, there she is. Yeah. Right.
They're acknowledging the
Yeah,
dualism.
it's I'm sorry, acknowledging what?
The dualism of the moon and Huntress Diana.
Yeah,
Thank you.
thanks for pointing that out. By the way, all these little symbols are meaningful. I've seen some commentary on these, not much, but you can find if you do a search online, for the symbols that are portrayed in these Beauchart cards or paintings.
Francis, I'll put a link in the chat because I found a link of a translation of Joffre's own comments on.
Oh, that's great. In fact, I'll pick up on that link as well. That's great. And he I wonder if he comments on these little symbols or if it's just a general commentary. I look forward to reading.
No, he comments on some of the many of the symbols that are in there. He does
He
on
does.
each one.
Cool. That's great.
So I'll find it and put it in the thing, the chat.
All right. Okay. Next, we have the quote from Richard Payne Knight's Symbolical Language of Ancient Art and Mythology. This is this has some good quotes in it. I read through some of the other stuff here, and there's some it's an interesting perspective. Let's see. The quote is, concerning the worship of the feminine or material principle, Knight writes, by attracting or heaving the waters of the ocean, she naturally appears to be the sovereign of humidity. And by seeming to operate so powerfully upon the constitution of women, she equally appeared to be the patroness and regulatress of nutrition and passive generation. So, without exception, every goddess of the mystery schools of the ancient world, took me a while to realize this, but it's true, represented some aspect of the Divine Mother, from Isis to Aphrodite, Inanna to Freya, Hera to Demeter, Lakshmi to Parvata, all personify some particular quality or qualities of what the Hindus call Mula Prakriti, the shining sea of substance. Hence, MPH's reference to ocean and humidity. Next, whence she is said to have received her nymphs or subordinate personifications from the ocean, and is often represented by the symbol of the sea crab, an animal that has the property of spontaneously detaching from its own body any limb that has been hurt or mutilated and reproducing another in its place. Just the orientation towards form is quite obvious. I found the passage in symbolical language immediately following that quoted in the text to be even more descriptive of the powers of the moon. Could we get a reader for this, please?
Scott, can you read that for us, please?
As the heat of the sun animated the seminal particles of terrestrial matter, so was the humidity of the moon supposed to nourish and mature them. And as her orbit was held to be the boundary that separated the celestial from the terrestrial world, she was the mediatrix between both, the primary subject of the one and sovereign of the other, who tempered the subtlety of ethereal spirit to the grossness of earthly matter. Or mater, I think that's a misspelling. So as to make them harmonize and unite.
Yeah, it is. It's supposed to be matter. Thanks, Scott. Okay, finally, in this passage, this water sign, being symbolic of the maternal principle of nature and recognized by the pagans as the origin of all life, was a natural and consistent domicile of the moon. As we discover in the book Esoteric Astrology, Cancer is actually predominantly ruled by Neptune, and the moon acts as a veiling agent for that planet. Can we get a reader, please?
Yes. And can you read that for us, please? Oh, yes, she's gone. And Veronica, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. Like Leo, which is ruled in all its three expression, orthodox, esoteric, and hierarchical by the sun, Cancer is the only other sign which is ruled by only one planet, though in orthodox astrology, the moon is substituted for Neptune, because it is the form nature which is dominant in the longer stage of human unfoldment, just as, esoterically, it is the feeling, sensitive nature, which dominates the average man. It is with this stable tendency that the disciple has to wrestle. In the mass mind, of which Cancer is the truest expression, it is fortunate that Neptune is veiled by the moon, and that the form fails to register or step down many of the impacts to which the true man is sensitive. Average humanity is not yet fully equipped to bear the full range of these impacts, to handle them constructively, or to transmute them and interpret them accurately.
Thanks, and Veronica. Any questions about this quote? Fascinating. The moon here, you know, veiling serves a lot of different purposes. And here we learn that it can act as a protective agency. So that the direct influence and impact of Neptune can be, you could say, stepped down or veiled because the average humanity is not yet equipped to bear those impacts. All right. Could we get a reader, please?
Martha, can you read that for us, please?
Yes. The autumnal equinox apparently occurs in the constellation of Libra, the balances. The scales tipped and the solar globe began its pilgrimage toward the house of winter. The constellation of the scales was placed in the zodiac to symbolize the power of choice, by means of which man may weigh one problem against another. Millions of years ago, when the human race was in the making, man was like the angels, who knew neither good nor evil. He fell into the state of the knowledge of good and evil when the gods gave him the seed for the mental nature. From man's mental reactions to his environments, he distills the product of experience, which then aids him to regain his lost position, plus an individualized intelligence. Paracelsus said, quote, "The body comes from the elements, the soul from the stars, and the spirit from God. All that the intellect can conceive of comes from the stars, that is, the spirit of the stars, rather than the material constellations," unquote. The constellation of Capricorn, in which the winter solstice theoretically takes place, was called the House of Death. For in winter, all life in the Northern Hemisphere is at its lowest ebb. Capricorn is a composite creature with the head and upper body of a goat and the tail of a fish. In this constellation, the sun is least powerful in the Northern Hemisphere, and after passing through this constellation, it immediately begins to increase.
Thank you, Martha. Okay. First, The autumnal equinox apparently occurs in the constellation of Libra, the balances. The scales tipped and the solar globe began its pilgrimage towards the house of winter. The constellation of the scales was placed in the zodiac to symbolize the power of choice, by means of which man may weigh one problem against another. So the esoteric version of this, ultimately the power of choice associated with Libra has to do with whether the pilgrim continues to move clockwise through the signs to further develop his or her personality, or alternately, and at the right time, has reached that point of balance between soul and personality influence that allows him or her to reverse one's direction on the wheel of life and begin to move counterclockwise through the signs, thereby, well, bringing in all the influences, for instance, of the esoteric rulers and traveling through progressively through the decadence, all with the idea of strengthening the presence of the soul in one's life. Next, millions of years ago, when the human race was in the making, man was like the angels, who knew neither good nor evil. He fell into the state of the knowledge of good and evil when the gods gave him the seed for the mental nature. The gods, quote unquote, being the Manasaputra or solar angels who chose to overshadow animal man, thus ushering him into the fourth kingdom of nature. This incipient mental nature is represented by Mercury, the exoteric ruler of Virgo. DK offers an interesting paragraph contrasting the Deva and human kingdoms. Could we get a reader, please?
Vivian, can you read that for us, please?
The fourth creative hierarchy, that of the human monads, has to learn to vibrate positively, but the Devas proceed along the line of least resistance. They remain negative, taking the line of acquiescence, of falling in with the law. Only the human monads, and only in the three worlds, follow the positive line. And by resistance, struggle, battle, and strife learn the lesson of divine acquiescence. Yet, owing to the increase of friction, through that very struggle, they progress with a relatively greater rapidity than the Devas. They have need to do this, for they have lost ground to make up.
Provocative, as usual. It brings up more questions than it answers. How did we lose ground? for instance. Okay, next. From man's mental reactions to his environment, his environments, he distills the product of experience, which then aids him to regain his lost position, plus an individualized intelligence. Paracelsus said, "The body comes from the elements, the soul from the stars, and the spirit from God. All that the intellect can conceive of comes from the stars, that is, the spirits of the stars, rather than the material constellations. Theosophically, the fires of mind are given at individualization. It is the ability to mentally reflect that distinguishes human beings from the animal kingdom from which humans came, at least in terms of their bodily nature. The Paracelsus quote comes from Astronomia Magna, published in 1538, which laid the foundation for later developments in alchemy and medicine. In it, Paracelsus introduces the concept of iliaster, a primordial substance from which all elements and matter originates, known in Hinduism as Mula Prakriti, and in Theosophy as the shining sea of homogeneous substance. Next, the constellation of Capricorn, in which the winter solstice theoretically takes place, was called the House of Death, for in winter all life in the northern hemisphere is at its lowest ebb. Capricorn is a composite creature with the head and upper body of a goat and the tail of a fish. In this constellation, the sun is least powerful in the northern hemisphere, and after passing through this constellation, it immediately begins to increase. So let's start with this passage from Esoteric Astrology on Capricorn. Can we get a reader?
Yes. Ariane, can you read that for us, please?
Let me try. I'm having trouble seeing the. It doesn't come up for me. I'm so sorry. The image.
Okay, then we'll get.
Yeah, I've got it. I've got it. So from the top, first of all,
yes,
Capricorn is an earth, and in it we've expressed the densest point of concrete materialization of which the human soul is capable. Secondly, Capricorn is ever the sign of conclusion. And of this, the mountaintop is frequently, though not always, the symbol. For it marks the point beyond which further ascent in any particular life cycle is not possible. Capricorn is, therefore, the sign of what has been called esoterically periodic arresting. Progress becomes impossible under the existing forms, and there has to be the descent into the valley of pain, despair, and death before a fresh attempt scale the heights takes place. Thirdly, Capricorn is, as a consequence of all the above, the sign in which is inaugurated a new cycle of effort. Whether this effort is in connection with the individual man or with the initiate, effort, strain, struggle, the fight with the forces native to the underworld, or the strenuous conditions entailed by the tests of discipleship or initiation, these are distinctive of esoteric astrology. Pages 158 to 159.
Thank you. Any thoughts about this? Any comments? Neither DK nor MPH talk about this symbol of Capricorn with the quote unquote fish's tail and the goat's head. One thing we can draw from it is that it represents the Cancer Capricorn axis, because with Cancer as a water sign, you have the water creature as its lowest point. And then at the top, you have, of course, the goat, which is ascends to the mountaintop. So that's one, probably not by any means final meaning for this very enigmatic figure, but nonetheless, And I see somebody who might be able to shed some light on this, but could we get some hands, please? Bianca.
Okay. First was Ariane. Please go ahead.
Yes, I just want to say that this is such a pertinent, relevant passage in, you know, it illuminates what is happening in the U.S. and that in a hyper-materialistic nation that is undergoing corruption in many of its realms due to the undue focus on the physical, the mountain, instead of the, you know, the invisible realms, or on the horny goat for that matter, instead of the goat's capacity to overcome his animal nature, that that the U.S. is undergoing like a crisis point in which we may be forced to pay our karmic debts finally. And it's as terrifying as that is for those of us who maybe live on the edge already economically, or, you know, there's so much precarity in the U.S. due to gross economic disparity. We understand, we need to know that all is a lesson of love, and that despite what happens to us, I mean, the soul doesn't care much about the body or longevity, that despite what happens to us, we as a nation also have an evolutionary trajectory, group karma as a nation in the U.S., and that we have to come into an awareness that we can no longer exist as privileged in a sea of despair, poverty, you know, gross, not only gross economic disparity, but this kind of injustice that watches on silently, complicit in, you know, mass migration and the refugees fleeing the violence, much of which we've created, or the economic and environmental disruption and catastrophe. And so he's talking about that. It's not just metaphorical. It's just a process that we all undergo. We undergo it even when we age, as things, the car falls apart, the body is going to start to devolve. And we could witness that.
Yeah.
And separate, detach.
Yeah, some good points. You know, what is it that quote, let the happenings of, no, and let it stand revealed, the love which underlies the happenings of the time, you know, that we have to really have faith in the plan, you know, when in times like this. And I thought those were very good comments, you know, about the U.S. and this stage. Yeah, good thoughts. And
okay.
Next.
Scott, please go ahead.
Yeah, 2 points that come to mind, minor points. The particular glyph that's used for Capricorn, that kind of combines the goat and the fishtail there.
Right.
It's called by DK, one of the secrets of initiation. It's never been drawn correctly because it lets in too much power of some sort.
Right.
I thought it was quite interesting because it is the most mysterious glyph. The other being that, interestingly enough, one of the things that's in the world, this world anyway, these days, is the acronym GOAT.
Oh, yeah.
Greatest of all time.
Yeah, yeah.
Usually applied to, I think, in sports, but could be elsewhere. So I think that's pretty interesting.
Yes, I never thought of that. Yeah, yeah, that's interesting. Yeah, another thing DK says about that symbol is that it's purposely not drawn correctly.
Right.
Yeah, because, and then as you say, as you, you know, indicate that if it was, it would bring in way too much power. So, yeah, so many things. Do we just get the tiniest hint at what's really going on? You know, that's an example of it. Okay, next hand.
We have, hold on, Joe, Let me read some comments first and then I'll get to you, okay? Greg says, and yes, our country, the US, is such a young nation. It is tricky to try and interpret anything. We're barely 245 years old, and compared to the many other influential materialistic nations throughout the world, like the UK, Switzerland, China, and others. So he's just emphasizing the points.
Yeah, good point. And it also, you know, it could be that we turn the corner here and this becomes a cautionary tale. These times become, you know, the coming election becomes a cautionary tale that we avoided by this, the consequences of which we avoided by the skin of our teeth. And then we have a, we still have some life left, you know, in terms of developing the all of the, well, what's called the democratic experiment, right? So good comments there, Greg. Yes, next.
Okay, Joe, you had your hand up, please go ahead.
Thank you. First of all, I'm really enjoying this conversation. I had the opportunity while it was happening to look at this passage synthetically, and I just want to note this for us all. First of all, we're dealing with earth, just a place, a ground. Secondly, it's a sign of conclusion. And over the last approximately 20 years, we've had the most concluding sign of planet, if you will, Pluto, traveling through. And right now it's in Capricorn, but it's moving into Aquarius shortly, before the end of the year. What we're looking at is a long period of purification, and then we see the third part, which is the sign of inauguration of a new cycle of effort. And I just want to leave with a hope sign, a sign of hope.
Yeah, and that, you know, Pluto, especially traveling through that last degree of Capricorn, which is, what did they call that degree? One of you astrologers will know. It's a common name for that last degree that really emphasizes the, you could say the calcification of the old. Like for instance, Pluto in the last degree of Capricorn, which we've experienced a lot of over the last year and a half, you know, has really excavated, you know, and as Joe says, Capricorn being the earth sign, you know, really excavated and brought to the surface that which needs to be transformed, you know, especially like top-down power systems that are no longer functioning in a way that is useful and that need to be reformed. And so that move into the first degree of Aquarius is a radical shift in the orientation of Pluto. And I think that's relevant here because it does bring up the nature of Capricorn.
Amaranthus.
Yeah.
Yes. Anaretic degree.
Anaretic. And
it can be considered malefic, but it also can be considered a critical degree. And the learning the lesson of that sign so you can spiral up if you're headed in the right direction. So, but yeah, anaretic degree is the technical term for it.
And that's often what malefic means, isn't it? You know, it's like, you know, it's from a personality point of view, it's malefic because it causes difficulty and pain. But at the same time, the lessons are given and learned, you know, that need to be incorporated before you can move on.
Absolutely. The school of hard knocks teaches
yeah.
us the best
that's my
lessons,
school.
Doesn't it? Okay, Ariane, go ahead.
Yes, I just want to respond to the comment in the chat. So Benjamin Krem, one of my teachers, he had said that America has a special role to play. It's not only an experiment in diversity, and the age of Aquarius is the time of unity and diversity. And you can see how close to it, there's so much tension. I just had to attend a Arab-Israeli forum, you know, related to my work, my professional work at any rate. So everything's always on like the edge of falling apart and people hating each other. And then when there's like this tension that is sustained and held, people feel just like something has been transformed in themselves because they witness that something within themselves, you know, surviving that tension. Yeah. And so if it, Benjamin Krem said the soul of America is second degree, second ray,
yeah.
Second, not second degree, second ray of love, wisdom, and our personality for this nation is sixth ray, just like Russia. And that's why we have so much conflict, because we're so ideologically rigid. And that has to go. And the sixth ray is passing out of this planet, out of this solar system. And it's based on desire. And we can see how this is so wrapped up in, you know, the Bhagavad Gita talks about it, how frustrated desire leads to anger, and how we, if we want to catapult our spiritual development, that we choose to observe and sacrifice our desires when we can, when appropriate, or we watch them, witnessing our reactions. Maybe we don't change anything. And that is the door open and out. And Americans' privilege, as it gets shorn away, we will see that they're, that from the soul, when the soul matures and America really takes the stage, if his predictions come true, if we manage to go through this period of the desert, and I don't know how long, it's certainly beyond my lifetime, I'm sure, this dry period or this time of fire and conflict, that if we get through that time, then we can see that there would be a new psychological and spiritual maturity. And we, the people in this room, could actually model that by understanding how we could be different in the moment and live up to that in this time, as we might strive to be a midwife between these ages in a small way, the age of Pisces, the age of idealism, but also fundamentalism of the pursuit of likes and dislikes, the maturation of the emotional realm as we understand ourselves as unique individuals, not a herd. But then as we move into this other realm, like where we're part of groups, but we retain our uniqueness, our individuality, and our consciousness, then we could think, how could I contribute? And I think Francis and Biel, you do that here beautifully. I'm sure Francis, you spend a lot of time preparing for this. I can't even imagine. And so you're doing this incredible service for us all. And I thank you.
Well, thank you. And thank you for your comments. Quite astute. We might add to the American scene the fact that there's a number of Atlanteans that are incarnating at this time. You know, a part of America was part of Atlantis, and that has drawn into incarnation some. And we know the Atlanteans were emotionally polarized, as is most of the planet at this time, most of humanity, the planet. The fact that the America has a six-ray personality would certainly attract that emotional polarity to incarnate and incarnate. And I think we're seeing the effects of that. But great comments. Anyone else? Okay.
Yes. Oh, sorry.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Greg says it also might be interesting to look at it from the 1776 or the 1787 U.S. constitutional charts, because isn't it interesting to consider that transiting Pluto is likely very close to the U.S. Pluto chart in either of these cases?
Yeah, well, that when did that come around? I think it was last year, wasn't it, that the U.S. had a Pluto return with the astrological community had a lot to say about what that might mean, you know, but the Pluto return. So yeah, thanks, Greg. Anyone else?
Well, I just want to add, I'm typing it in the chat right now. AAB's Destiny of Nations goes into a lot of what Ariane was just describing. For the U.S., it talks about the role of the U.S. in great detail and the difference between the soul and the personality rays and how they're working out. But then also the roles of many, many nations are described and compared and contrasted in there. It's a fascinating little book if you haven't read it yet.
Oh, it's a great book. It's all aspects of, you know, DK is usually not what you might call topical. That is, you know, dealing with physical plane existence, and that book very much takes in hand the qualities of the, not all the nations, but a significant number, where he gives the ray attributions and talks about, has very marked opinions about how these nations and their rays have interacted with other nations through the ray qualities. It makes associations that you wouldn't normally make. Yeah, I consider it a must read. It's a short book, so it's a good read. Anyone else?
That's all I see for right now.
Okay, so before turning the page in the folio edition of the Secret Teachings, let's take a look at the illustration in the center of page 54. Could we get a reader for the text beneath that illustration? By the way, I took this from the original source. It's quite a bit better resolution than the one that appears in Stoa.
Rudy, can you read that for us, please?
Can you hear me?
Yes.
The pagans believed that the zodiac formed the body of the grand man of the universe. This body, which they called the macrocosm, the great world, was divided into 12 major parts, one of which was under the control of the celestial powers reposing in each of the zodiacal constellations. Believing that the entire universal system was epitomized in man's body, which they called the microcosm, the little world, they evolved that now familiar figure of the Kut Ob Man in the almanac. By allotting a sign of the zodiac to each of 12 major parts of the human body.
Thank you. Okay. The illustration comes from Margherita Philosophica, written by Gregor Reisch in 1525. The text in the illustration is in Latin, but the graphics pretty much indicate what parts of the body are ruled by each sign. So could we get a reader just to read the caption here at the bottom? And I'll go through the slides. I'll go through 12 slides. You can just read the 12 captions. Reader for that, please.
Okay, Greg, can you read that for us, please?
Yeah. Aries. Head, face, brain, and eyes.
Okay, hold it. There's an echo, so I'll read it. I'll go ahead and read it.
I think she fixed the echo. Head.
Okay.
Usually when I turn off my audio, the echo goes away. So let me turn off my audio.
Okay. Are you still getting the echo?
No.
Okay. Torus, neck, throat, vocal cords, and thyroid. Gemini, arms, lungs, hands, and nervous system. Cancer, chest, stomach, breasts, and diaphragm. Leo, heart, upper back, and spine. Virgo, abdomen, intestines, and digestive system. Libra, lower back, kidneys, and bladder. Scorpio, genitals, reproductive organs, and colon. Sagittarius, hips, thighs, and liver. Capricorn, knees, bone, skin, and teeth. Aquarius, calves, ankles, and circulatory system. And Pisces, feet and lymphatic system.
Thank you, Greg. Kind of a fun little chart. Quite old, quite old. What did I say? It was from the 1500s sometime. So, okay, so turning to page 55, could we get a reader?
Red, can you read that for us, please? Fred?
Usually takes him a minute to unmute, so give him a minute.
Okay, can you hear me?
Just
Yes.
barely.
In this constellation, and after passing through this
Hey, Fred,
series of moons,
you're gonna have to get closer to your mic.
now
You're
where
cutting
are
in and out.
you? Since the Greeks said that Jupiter, a name of the sun god, was suckled by a goat, a new and different side light on zodiacal symbolism is supplied by John Cole in a treatise on the circular zodiac of Ben Mira in Egypt. The symbol, therefore, of the goat rising from the body of a fish, Capricorn, represents with the greatest propriety the mountainous buildings of Babylon rising out of its low and marshy situation. The two horns of the goat being emblematical of the two towns, Nineveh and Babylon, the former built on the Tigris and the latter on the Euphrates, but both subjected to one's sovereignty. The period 2160, period of 2160 years required for the regression of the sun through one of the zodiacal constellations is often termed an age. According to this system, the age secured its name from the sign through which the sun passes year after year as it crosses the equator at the vernal equinox. From this arrangement are derived the terms the Taurian Age, the Aryan Age, the Piscean Age, the Aquarian Age. During these periods or ages, religious worship takes the form of the appropriate celestial sign, that which the sun is said to assume as a personality, in the same manner that a spirit assumes a body. These 12 signs are the jewels of his breastplate, and his light shines forth from them, one after the other.
Thank you, Fred. You might check, it's a little down arrow next to your audio microphone. If you click on that, you get a, let's see, where is that? At the very bottom, it says audio settings. And if you click on that, there's a choice of background noise suppression. I'm telling you all this because it sounds like you have the background noise suppression at a very high level, because it's wanting to take you out, like we lose a lot. So if you do have it on high, then you want to lower it. Put it on either low, that's what I put it on. You can try auto if you do have some background noise in the house. But that could be the reason for the poor audio coming from you. And that goes for all of you, it's Did you say something, Fred? I couldn't hear you. Okay. Sorry.
I'll look and see.
Okay, yeah, because you're cut, even when you're just now responding, you're cutting in and out a lot. And often that's because the system cuts the feed. It thinks your voice is background noise, I guess. Okay, so first, adding the last statement from the previous page for context, we have, in this constellation, the sun is least powerful in the northern hemisphere, and after passing through this constellation, it immediately begins to increase. Hence, the Greek said that Jupiter, a name of the sun god, was suckled by a goat. Hesiod's Theogony relates the story of the infant Zeus, later known as Jupiter in Roman mythology, being suckled by Amalthea, that's the name of the goat, who is depicted as either a goat or a nymph who nursed Zeus while he was hidden from his father Cronus. MPH here suggests that the waxing sun in Capricorn is the esoteric meaning behind Jupiter being suckled by the goat. Okay, next. A new and different sidelight on zodiacal symbolism is supplied by John Cole in a treatise on the circular zodiac of Tentera in Egypt. So, quote, "The symbol, therefore, of the goat rising from the body of the fish, Capricorn, represents with the greatest propriety the mountainous buildings of Babylon rising out of its low and marshy situation, the two horns of the goat being emblematical of the two towns, Nineveh and Babylon, the former built on the Tigris, the latter on the Euphrates, but both subjected to one sovereignty." So it was hard to read that with a straight face, but here we go. Here's John Cole's A Treatise on the Circular Zodiac of Tentera in Egypt. When unfolded, we discover that the illustration at left is a map of the zodiac of Dendera. It's a much more common name for a Tentera, it's Dendera. Cole believed that the 12 zodiacal signs were conceived in ancient Babylon and that they reference either biblical stories or local Babylonian phenomena. For example, in his view, Aquarius represents, represents the flow of the Tigris-Euphrates River into the Persian Gulf. In a passage on the symbols used in the zodiac and Dendera, Cole says, "Hence we may esteem the visions of Daniel and the revelation of St. John as the most accurate accounts we at present possess of the significations of the Babylonish symbolical imagery, and may consequently use those holy books for the explication of this and following emblematical figures. So in my estimation, this is just another example of how certain authors chose to see Christian and biblical origins in not only the zodiacal signs, but in all the ageless wisdom teachers, right? Which in my view disregards not only their symbolical significance, but also the much earlier origins of these signs. Remember when I was saying there are some really great books that are brought up through MPH? This is pointedly not one of them. Okay. Next. The period of 2160 years required for the regression of the sun through one of the zodiacal constellations is often termed an age. According to the system, the age secured its name from the sign through which the sun passes year after year as it crosses the equator at the vernal equinox. From this arrangement are derived the terms the Taurian age, the Aryan age, the Piscean age, and the Aquarian age. So a couple of sessions ago, we talked about how the sun's relative position to the zodiac slips just less than a minute of arc every year, resulting in a westward drifting along the ecliptic of the positions of the equinoxes, resulting in the precession of the equinoxes, which is responsible for the 12 zodiacal ages. Okay? As seen here, these blue lines separate the ages. And finally, during these periods or ages, religious worship takes the form of the appropriate celestial sign, that which the sun is said to assume as a personality in the same manner that a spirit assumes a body. These 12 signs are the jewels of his breastplate, and his light shines forth from them, one after the other. Okay, so as a bit of a perspective problem here. Since the zodiacal ages, as we know them, only exist on Earth, occurring as a result of the wobble or circular cycle of Earth's North Pole, the idea that they represent of a series of solar incarnations is colorful but inaccurate. Nonetheless, it's true that humanity has viewed the nature of the sun through the lens of each age and interpreted the sun's qualities in terms of the symbolism associated with the signs and ages. But we know from Decay that actual solar systemic incarnations are in fact infinitely longer in duration. HPB puts the figure at 311 trillion 40 billion years. However, from an earthly perspective, the zodiacal age can be seen as the energies of the constellations reflected through the prism of the sun, thus bringing to life the ray energies associated with each of the signs. This is, you know, largely review. He himself in his text has reviewed what he stated earlier in this chapter. Okay, next up, could we get a reader, please?
Can you read that for us, please?
Who did you say?
Ken.
Oh, okay.
From a consideration of this system, it is readily understood why certain religious symbols were adopted during different ages in the Earth's history. For during the 2,160 years the sun was in the constellation of Taurus, it is said that the solar deity assumed the body of Apis. and the bull became sacred to Osiris. For details concerning the astrological ages as related to biblical symbolism, see The Message of the Stars by Max and Augusta Voss Hinda. During the Aryan Age, the lamb was held sacred, and the priests were called shepherds. Sheep and goats were sacrificed upon the altars, and a scapegoat was appointed to bear the sins of Israel. During the age of Pisces, the fish was the symbol of divinity, and the sun god fed the multitude with two small fishes. The frontispiece of Inman's Ancient Faiths shows the goddess Isis with a fish on her head, and the Indian savior god Krishna, in one of his incarnations, was cast from the mouth of a fish. Not only is Jesus often referred to as the fisher of men, but as John P. Lundy writes, the word fish is an abbreviation of his whole title, Jesus Christ, the Son of God, Savior, and Cross. And as St. Augustine expresses it, if you join together the initial letters of the five Greek words, Jesus Christos Theou, which mean Jesus Christ, Son of God, Savior, they will make Jesus fish, in which word Christ is mystically understood, because he was able to live in the abyss of his mortality as in the depth of waters, that is, without sin. Monumental Christianity. Many Christians observe Friday, which is sacred to the Virgin Venus, upon which day they shall eat fish and not meat. The sign of the fish was one of the earliest symbols of Christianity, and when drawn upon the sand, it informed one Christian that another of the same faith was near.
Thank you, Ben. Kudos on the Latin, by the way. Okay, first, from a consideration of the system, it is really understood why certain religious symbols were adopted during different ages of the Earth's histories. For during the 2160 years the Earth was in the constellation of Taurus, it is said that the solar deity assumed the body of Apis, or Apis, and the bull became sacred to Osiris. Well, you know, this is definitely repetition. He's given us these ideas before, but we can work with that. G.R.S. Mead describes the connection between Apis and Osiris. Quote, the majority of the priests say that Osiris and Apis have been woven together into the same name, Serapis, explaining and teaching that we should look on the Apis as an informed image of the soul of Osiris. The sculpture is quite interesting, you know, showing the Egyptians' ability for abstract thought. You know, this isn't obviously not representational, you know, of some god walking around, right? It's all about attributes. This passage describes how exact the physical signs had to be before a young bull was recognized as Apis, who, once the signs were found to be present, was then regarded as a solar incarnation. Could we get a reader, please?
Yes, I'll read. It was necessary that he, the bull as candidate for the solar incarnation as Apis, should be black, with a triangle of white on his forehead, a white spot in the shape of a crescent on his side, and sort of knot like a beetle under his tongue. When one was found, he was fed four moches in a building facing the east. At the new moon, he was led to a splendid ship with great solemnity. When conveyed to Heliopolis, where he was fed 40 days more by priests and women. After this, no one was permitted to approach him. From Heliopolis, he was taken to Memphis, where he had a temple, two chapels to dwell in, and a large court for exercise. He had the gift of prophecy. The omen was good or bad as he went into one chapel or the other. Notwithstanding all this reverence, he was not suffered to live beyond 25 years. His death caused universal mourning. He was an important symbol in the mysteries of Isis.
Sorry, I didn't get around to correcting this. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I mean, would you just imagine how difficult it was to find a bull that would have each of these? I mean, some of them would be easy. It's got to be black. But just to start with the triangle of white on his forehead, well, that cuts it down quite a bit. But then a crescent, an addition, a white crescent on his side, and a sort of beetle, a knot like a beetle under his tongue. You know, that gets very specific, and you have to believe that indeed there was some inner side magic that allowed such a beast to be born and recognized. And it reminds me a little bit of the Tibetans' recognition of a tulku, you know, where he's supposed to be born in such and such a place, and then they present him with all these items which he chooses if he is indeed the reincarnation of one of their higher priests or the Dalai Lama himself. Okay.
Francis?
Yeah.
Sorry, we've got a comment here from Greg. He says, that's really powerful to know that MPH describes aspects of originations of certain Chohans, such as Serapis Bey, for the fourth ray of harmony and conflict, and also its deep relationship to the divas in all the expressions.
Thank you, Greg. We're going to have to hurry right along. Let's get Ariane's comment, and then we'll pull the plug.
Yes, I don't know if people are aware, but in Yellowstone National Park in America, the Lakota tribe, they have this myth of the birth of a white buffalo calf, and one was sighted this past year. It's like one in a million's birth, and it's supposedly a sign and a prophecy of the return of the Christ, and it has already happened this year. It's so unusual.
Yeah.
A little white calf, and you can Google that and just see that, and this is such an extraordinary time to be alive. Seize the day.
It is, yeah. Seize the day indeed. And go see the white calf. Thank you all. I really enjoyed this session. You want to announce some dates, BL?
Yes, dates and time changes. You know how that is in the fall. Okay. The next TCF is going to be the 11th of October.
Which is this coming Friday.
At 7 p.m. GMT. The next Secret Doctrine is going to be 20 October at 7 p.m. GMT. Then there will be another TCF on the 25th of October at 7 p.m. GMT. And then, whoops, we move into November. And the next STOA on the 3rd of November will be when America goes back to standard time. So we will revert to 8 p.m. GMT from then on for 4 or 5 months for all of these webinars. So I just wanted to make that point.
Yeah, good point. So, you know, if you come to any other than just the secret teachings, any than just this webinar, we'll be giving you heads up on the coming time change. But if not, then take note that the next secret teachings of all ages will be under standard time And like I've said before, the best way to deal, to handle all these changes is just go to MoriFederation.com and check out the calendar, because that usually 99% of the time is correct, and you can use that link, right? So, okay.
I also want to point out that the Europeans move to standard time, I think, a week or two before we do here in the States. So if you live in another country besides, besides North America, because Canada goes with us, you want to definitely check and make sure what 8 p.m. GMT will be for you when we convert, when we change over on the 3rd. Okay, so bye, everybody.
Vivian or Anne Veronica, do you know that date of that change?
I'm afraid I don't, Francis. I think it's at the end of October, but I'm never sure. I wait until nearer the time.
Yeah, okay. Well, just have heads up on that, because that might also affect the, for instance, the last Treatise on Cosmic Fire webinar. I don't know if it with the Secret Doctrine, but just have a heads up on those date changes, on those time changes. Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, everybody.
We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Thank you.